Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this show is going to have soul. Deep soul, actually. And helpful soul. Actually, this show is about the soul solution. So, opportunity is awaiting for us. And I'm interviewing the author of a book called The Soul Solution, Enlightening Meditations for Resolving Life's Problems. It also has a lot of information about our souls and our egos, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm happy to welcome Jonathan Parker to the show.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you. I'm glad you could. And I've really enjoyed the discussions and also the meditations. These meditations are really deep, and we're going to get into that because they're beautiful opportunities for people to reconnect and be with spirit of their soul. And to do that, there's a lot of discussion in the book about who our souls are, what our egos are about, what we need to let go of, and obviously this book, well, it comes from a long history that you have of working with people to bring their souls into their lives.
Yes.
And so you've worked with thousands of people. And
that's right.
What could we say is the key modality that you use?
Well, probably the soul solution, actually.
Okay.
In some cases, there's some components to energy, subtle energy work that I do, but this really goes to a level beyond that because it brings about a shift in consciousness. So if you just clear the energetics of an issue, but you don't address a consciousness shift, then a person could find themselves recreating the situation. So I can use some energy techniques with people, and I do a lot of that over the phone. Most of the people I work with is actually over the phone. And it kind of depends on what they're calling about, but I address it from whatever point of view we need to do to get the shift to happen so that they don't continue in their pattern.
Right, and I'm glad you're talking about that because a lot of feel-good techniques are really excellent band-aids,
mm-hmm.
but they don't necessarily change anything dramatically or long-term.
I think that's the shortcoming of talk therapy in general, is it addresses it, but it kind of keeps stirring the stew, so to speak.
Well, it keeps you in the same reality.
Yeah.
It might help you understand it better.
Right, right.
But what I like about your book is that it actually introduces another way of being.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And being with self in a much more profound, deeper, less egotistical way. Now, let's talk about the ego, because
sure.
you have a lot to say about it in the book. And you're not a big fan of the ego.
Well, it is what seems to be responsible for most of the struggles and sufferings that people go through. I don't think the ego is ill-intentioned. I think it really would like to solve some of these things, but it just goes about doing it in ways that dig us deeper into the hole. So it operates primarily through the mind and the five senses separately from the soul, and it's driven by insecurity and fear. So it's what causes people to feel angry or guilty or fear-driven or depressed or futile or feeling alone and abandoned and just about everything else negative. And it does all of those things out of a desire to increase its level of security and safety.
Well, I guess, as you say in the book, that it does it because it doesn't realize that it doesn't need to be in charge.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't know any other way to do it. Because it's separate from the soul or from spirit, it doesn't know how to make that connection. So that's where we come in. We're kind of the mediator there, and through our free will, our choices, our decisions, we can make that connection for it and essentially bring, I like to think of it as actually healing the ego. I know some of the Eastern approaches talk about killing the ego and destroying the ego and getting rid of the ego, and in a sense it does go away, but if you approach it that way, you're bringing a lot of resistance to it, and it knows how to defend itself if you come at it very directly. But if you approach it much like you would a little child who is injured, who's wanting to be healed and held and loved, you'll find that the ego will actually relax its resistance. And that's where the soul comes in then, and
right.
replaces it.
Right. I always tell people that the ego is our measuring tool. And yet we need a measuring tool in life because we do have to measure things. But I guess it depends on how obsessive compulsive our measuring tool is. And so how do you differentiate between the mind that has perspective in this realm of third dimensional density versus the ego that feels that it needs to protect us so much?
Sure. Well, the mind is just a tool, so it can either operate with an operating system of the ego, or it can operate with the soul. And for the most part, people are tricked into thinking that this false self that they think they are, this ego, is the real them. And when in actuality, it's the soul. And so the soul, like, usurps control of the mind, perceptions, emotions, and most of what make up people's lives. But the soul is also capable of running the show and being an alternate operating system.
Well, I like that idea, and I think we need to embrace that potential. But I want to ask you why the soul got us in this predicament to begin with.
Well, I don't think it did. I think we got ourselves into the predicament through the choices that we made, and every time you react from the basis of the ego, let's say with anger or fear, you feed more life force into it, and so you essentially empower it. And by doing that over a long period of time, it becomes who we think we are, so we identify ourselves with it. The soul is always there, and people are in touch with it when they're listening to beautiful music, or they're feeling love, or they're watching a beautiful sunset or something. So it's there, and people know it, and they've been in touch with it at different times, but for the most part, they're driven by these stronger drives and emotions that come from the ego. So in a sense, we were tricked, and we tricked ourselves into making these choices, and by disconnecting from the soul, we ended up unwittingly empowering the ego.
Okay, that sounds very helpful. Now, let's talk about the definition that of soul that we are relating to here.
Sure. The way I'm using it, actually, there's two different ways I'm using it in the book. In the first part of the book, it's referring to the individualized expression of the divine spirit that pervades all existence. So it's our uniqueness of who we are in the pure essence of our being. Sometimes it's called the true self, or the authentic self, or the divine self, or the higher self in some cases. And I would make that a soul with a little s. But then there's also another bigger soul with a capital S that's referring to the entire cosmos and all creation and the intelligent spirit that pervades all existence. And later in the book, I refer to that as the highest enlightened awareness of our soul, which is just a kind of a way I came up with of connecting with that higher aspect as distinct from the individualized soul.
Well, let me describe something, because I work professionally as an intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And when I work with people, I climb into information that is available in the universe about them, but also about anyone connected to them, and events as well. And it's amazing how universal that information is. So somehow I connect and I teach other people how to do it. I think we all can do it. And in many, many ways, we all always do it anyhow on an unconscious level. We're just, we just have that ego that's trying to protect us from what we aren't conscious of. And or what we are conscious of, I should say. And so we all are connected universally to all knowing. And intuitives in general are people who are closer to the awareness of that.
Right. Well, I think that most souls have a lot of commonality. Just like there's 7 billion people on the planet, but we all recognize they're human beings, but they have individual characteristics. And the soul is that way as well. There are some qualities about it that are common. For instance, deep unconditional love, compassion, joyfulness, happiness, sense of completion. I kind of collectively refer to it as essential goodness. It's all of the wonderful, beautiful, virtuous, good traits that we would aspire to. And so that part of us makes us very similar below the surface. But then we all have our individual experiences and our the spin that we put on things. And if we come from a positive orientation with that, then we're operating with what I would sometimes call positive ego. It's the individuality, but yet we're connected, and we know that we're not separate. And when the soul is fully present, there's a sustained awareness of that fact. And in that vast awareness, we have access to all kinds of interesting information about our past and about what makes us up, and as you said, the connections that we have with other people.
Right, that deeper part knows all.
It does, yes.
And it's wonderful to be part of that. I am very blessed in my life to experience that, although I'm not as good as experiencing it for myself, because my ego gets in the way.
Oh.
And I think that's true of all intuitives, is that we're only as good as we can deal with that part of ourselves that your book addresses. Is that ego that is on a survival path that doesn't realize that there are greater powers within that can be surrendered to. And that's, I think, the genius and the gift of your book is to actually create process that allows people to directly experience that.
Yeah, I think that's what also makes the Soul Solution book unique and different from other spiritual books is the fact that it involves the reader to have his or her own experience of connecting with the soul. So you really don't come to understand spiritual matters, and certainly not the soul, just by hearing somebody talk about it. That can maybe start the process, but it's something to be experienced. And most people don't even think about it very much, or they wouldn't know where to go or how to make that connection. And I've been doing this for quite a few decades now, and so I've done thousands, tens of thousands of sessions with people and helping facilitate them to make that connection, and it's most profound. I've been doing it for over 30 years, and I'm still amazed that I can be on the phone thousands of miles away from someone and help the, I'm kind of like a catalyst to help person make that connection and watch the shift and the transformation that they go through.
So do you put them through a guided meditative experience on the phone?
In some cases, there's some component to that, but a lot of it is, I'm also quite intuitive, so I'm able to get inside of people's thinking process and feeling process and help them to recognize their blind spots. And by getting in touch with these patterns, we can start lifting them and acknowledging that it's okay to let that go, that we don't have to keep this program running in there any longer. And in many ways, the ego is just a very complex program of negative ways of coping with the reality that we have. And so each of these can actually be shifted. They did appear to dissolve, but actually I think of more that they disappear because they're illusions.
That's it, and that's what you say in the book. It's coping, not coping with so much with the reality that we have, but with the illusory reality that we have.
Right.
And I think it's clear the way you describe it, that our fears, all of our stories, are either in the past or in the future.
Right.
And that's all an illusion.
It is. It's just an idea in our head. And yet we become slaves to it, and we think it's us. And that's where that trickster comes in. The ego gets us to thinking that's who we are. And it makes us feel helpless in some cases to do anything about it.
And people have very good arguments, don't they?
Oh, well, every defense mechanism imaginable. The ego is highly skilled at protecting its own existence. That's its primary drive. And so it's very clever in that sense. It's not that difficult to actually work with. But as soon as you get one issue to clear, it will instantly, like in a split second, it'll switch to another defense mechanism. And in some cases, it'll actually even participate in helping you to heal and to let go of something until it gets to a certain point. And then it says, wow, if we keep letting go of this fear, then how are we going to protect ourselves? I better hang on to some of it. So then it starts resisting at a certain point because it thinks it might need that particular defense mechanism if something it perceived to be threatening in the future came along. When in truth, if the soul is present and the soul is the operating system, you're more safe than you could ever be because you are operating in a place of synchronicity and harmony, and so much becomes automatic where you don't have to, sometimes it's called effortless effort, you don't have to put so much strain and struggle into things. They more or less take care of themselves.
And that's a learning process, too, that we have to trust that our souls can do that. And part of what you guide people through are meditative experiences where they can actually feel the presence of that strength. And yet some of it, they have to trust you and all the experiences of these decades of working with people that it can work.
Yeah, I think it takes a little bit of faith, I guess, in the beginning. But once they start having an experience, nobody can take that away from you. And in the beginning, you may not notice much or feel very much because, well, we're not really taught to sense with an inner sense of what a spiritual feeling is or what these inner experiences are like. And so people don't even know it in the beginning what to look for. But it gradually reveals itself to you. And probably the characteristic that people tell me the most that they notice is they feel a very deep peace, more deep peaceful than they've ever felt in their entire life.
And that is contagious, too.
Yes. Actually, other people around them begin to experience that, too. And people like to be around people that are peaceful.
Sure. And yet the peace comes from that inner strength that it's all okay. And a lot of what the goal, the ultimate goal of being a healer is to help people know that they're okay anyway.
Yes, that's the other part of the soul as it takes over more and more of a person's life. There's a feeling of empowerment. It's different from power, which is what the soul or the ego utilizes, which is a control mechanism. The empowerment is a sense of relaxed knowing who I am, a feeling of being complete and whole and connected and at peace. And that brings a different kind of an inner power where external things are not determining what your inner space is like.
But there's a learning process to giving up judgment.
Well, I think judgment is one of the big keys in the whole process, and it's a little tricky because it's a mental process. Sometimes we can get more in touch with the feeling, but we're not as able to get in touch with how we're judging. And it takes monitoring yourself. But judgment, if we could eliminate judgment, you'd essentially eliminate the ego, because that's what it's doing constantly, is forming conclusions, creating beliefs, and then warehousing them in its reservoir of history so that it can draw on it in the future if it feels something threatening is coming along.
Right. Recently I did a couple of shows about the Bhagavad Gita, which is thousands of years old. It's a book of great wisdom. And in that book, it says that we don't understand how it's all perfect anyway. And so through that book, you can understand what this judgment process is about and how much of an illusion it is, because what do we know? You know, we look at the world around us right now. It's frightening. And let's just say it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that it's bad? We don't know. Maybe it's bringing us to incredible good, but it has to go through this incredible, terrible time.
Sure.
And we don't know that. So all we can do is judge that the sky is falling and run for cover. And there's something about that is the illusion at work.
Yes. Well, when the soul is operating, it gives you a sense of trust in whatever process is ongoing. So it does not project judgment on things or reactions to things.
Right.
It's able to be present with, be aware of, participate, support. I mean, it involves itself in those ways, but it does not engage and it does not react. And so it doesn't get into the negative aspects of it, and it enables you to be in a present state of a very deep sense of trust, trusting life that everything is okay and moving in the way that it was supposed to move.
It's so interesting that at this time of so many egos in the world doing all kinds of ridiculous things, that we have your work and works of others who are bringing in great opportunity to enhance consciousness.
Sometimes I've said this world seems to be of the ego, by the ego, for the ego, because it's certainly a predominant operating system.
But maybe the bigger it is, the harder it falls.
Yes, I think that's true. At some point, people are going to wake up. I think that's inevitable, actually.
Well, that was actually the start of the Renaissance in Europe so many centuries ago, when the world wasn't working at all and everything was going to pieces, and they needed to be reborn into mm-hmm. into the Renaissance. And it feels like we're at that stage where we see that the ego is not winning.
Right.
You know, it can't resolve anything.
No, it can't.
And so let's look at that on the macro level, but also on the micro level of our own lives, how hard it is to suffer when we don't need to, if we can understand that it's all okay anyway.
Yes.
So
that puts you in a place of being non-resistant. And when you're not resisting, that's when the soul can come through. That's when transformation happens and things shift, and it's contagious.
Right. So it's a great opportunity. The book, The Soul Solution, is such a tool to go within, to be guided through meditations. They're all guided meditations that help you define the feelings of that greater self.
That's right. And also, when people get the book, there's a code in the book. They can go to my website, jonathanparker.org, and they can actually download some of those meditations as MP3 files, so they can have them audio. And there's actually quite a bit of stuff on my website about the soul and other subjects, spiritual subjects, a lot of free material there, videos and audios they can download, articles and all kinds of things they can access.
Yeah, that's an opportunity, especially to have you have recordings of you guiding meditations, so you don't have to read it in the book.
Right.
This way you can have your eyes closed.
Yeah, and I thought that would be helpful to people because it would also help them to get the idea of how to do those meditations, and then when they read them in the book, they can kind of go at their own pace that way.
And perhaps even make up their own.
Oh, yes.
Yep. And making up their own from this experience, they can emphasize what they feel that they need to the most.
That's where the value comes in, is everybody having their own experience of the soul, so that they're not just hearing what I say about it or what anybody says about it for that matter, but their own experience. So I don't try to define a doctrine about the soul or anything like that. It's the whole emphasis of the Soul Solution book is for people to have their own experience with it.
Right. I actually had an experience where I did a hypnotic regression. Somebody did it for me, and I was back in between my last lifetime and this lifetime, and I came across this old man who was sitting there. I didn't know who he was. And all of a sudden, I was in tears, and I was narrating to the hypnotherapist because we were recording the session. And I'm sitting with this man, and he is me, and I am him.
Oh, wow. How profound.
And I am him. And I didn't know who he was at the time. Mm-hmm. And then later in the session, the hypnotherapist said, well, I was with my spirit guides at that point. He said, why don't you ask your spirit guides if you can meet your higher self? And I did, and they said, oh, that was that man that you were sitting with. Mm-hmm. And he had said nothing to me. Mm-hmm. His presence was so beautiful. And I was in tears in his presence. And now, in retrospect, it meant so much to me to see my higher self. And that's also an illusion of a higher self, because
sure,
it could be in any form. But to have the experience of what it felt like to be with that deep presence,
mm-hmm,
has now changed the way I know myself. And
it's an experience that's even hard to put in words, I find, because
right,
we don't have the language for some of these things, and they're beyond conceptualization in so many cases.
Right.
They're deep realizations, and they're so profound.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to get this book out there, and people can have those experiences for themselves in their own ways. And they can go to your website, jonathanparker.com.
.org.
Yeah. .org, I'm glad you said that. And actually, climb into it. And what a gift. And so we're about to end the show. And this has been a great pleasure to talk with you about the incredible work you, not only you're doing, but have done and have brought you to this place and at this time in the world where this is needed so much.
Well, I sure do appreciate you letting me come on your show. Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck with this. I'm sure that it'll be embraced by so many people.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. And I'm Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network, and I can be reached at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, and thank you so much for listening.